Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, and today's host of Startup Hustle Podcast. Here to cover all things about e-commerce, startups, entrepreneurship, you name it. Today's episode is how to win in the new normal of e-commerce. I'm super excited about today's topic because it's something I have personally been investing a lot of time in order to stay ahead, you know, stay innovative, stay quick. That's always the key to winning in e-commerce. So before we get into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has a platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Tim Keen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. Excited about it.
Super excited for today's convo, just to pick your brain. You know, hopefully I walk away with something. Hopefully our listeners walk away with something as well. Based out of LA, company is Loop Club, but you're in Berlin today. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm coming to the tail end of a little vacation.
Yeah. Well, Berlin, one of my favorite cities in the world. I hope you're enjoying it. And when you come back, hopefully you're rested and ready to go. I know LA can be draining. Kansas City can be draining. Last time I was in Berlin was like around Christmas time. So I was doing all the Christmas markets and I was just like candy shop, I think. So enjoy. What's the temperature there like right now?
This time it's hot, man. It's crazy. It's like, I keep forgetting that it's really hot and I keep going outside in like a long sleeve shirt, but like, it's really hot. It's warm.
Yeah. Like 90, like, do you
like
know?
Close to 100. I think today was, wow. Like, I've gone back to my Celsius brain. So 34, you know, C in, you know, what is that? Yeah. 93. Wow. There was a day where it was close to 100 the other week. It's people are freaking out. They don't know what to do. They're like,
okay. Cause I always just picture it in coats. Like, you know, I don't know. I know that's not true, but that's what I picture. No,
this is very unusual for sure.
Well, I love to get started like with the show and for the listeners, just getting to know a little bit more about you, you know, getting to know more about my guests, you know, where you come from, you know, how you got started in entrepreneurship. Obviously, you know, there's a story before Loop Club. So as far back as you'd like to go, you know, share with us, like, did you always know you're going to be an entrepreneur? Did you like come out of school into e-commerce? Did you even go to school? Share some of your early days with us.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my story is pretty weird, I will say. So I grew up in Australia and I was always a musician, played in bands. I was, you know, kind of, you know, and then I did my
like
undergrad.
August Burns Red?
Sorry?
August Burns Red? August Burns Red?
I actually don't know who that is. Australian band? Check it
out.
I
think so. They're metal.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I like metal. I'll check it out. But yeah, so I was you know, always playing music, but I also like did well in school, I guess. So I did like a pre-med degree. And then I was like, wait a second, like, I don't know if I want to do this right now. And I took a year off and I moved to Montreal in Canada. And I just started playing drums.
Good spot.
I ended up in a band. That band did, you know, we're just playing music in our house, and the band did like pretty well. So we got signed, we're on a record label, and we're touring a lot. So it's kind of on the road all the time. This is like 2014, just traveling all the time, like in Europe, like all around America. And it was, you know, it's crazy. It's like, you're like, quote unquote, living the dream. But, you know, the real challenge of that is like, even like these top tier bands, like if you think of like a band that you've heard of, like unless they're like really famous and also super good with money, like chances are they don't make any money at all. Yeah. Like
school teachers or less.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're lucky, you make a school teacher's salary. So it's pretty hard. Like it is really hard, and all your time is taken up. So I was visiting LA from Montreal. Like I was like, I just had to like figure something out. And I was like, okay, I need to figure out how to make money online. So I think like a lot of people, I just like tried a bunch of stuff. Like the first thing that I tried was, I was doing like online surveys, you know, where like a brand will be like, I'll give you $2 if you spend 30 minutes telling us about like, you know, toilet paper or whatever. And I was like, wait a second, this is like maybe like the least efficient way of making money that I've ever heard of. Like I have to click like 100 times and I get $2. Like there's got to be like a better like dollars per click ratio that I can find here if I can apply myself a little bit. So it started like, you know, like everyone, like I literally typed in like how to make money online, and I went through all kinds of stuff. And I learned a little bit about everything. I learned a little bit about SEO. I kind of like learned a little bit about how to build websites, and I started building like WooCommerce stores. I was like drop shipping on WooCommerce. For whatever reason, I was like, Shopify is too easy. It seems too easy. I'm going to do it the hard way. And eventually found a little bit of success. I actually just went found my statements the other day. I didn't make that much money, but I was drop shipping on WooCommerce. And
when was that? Like year, do you think? That's hilarious. Okay. I didn't mean to.
Because it was I found a website. I found a competitor that was doing 120,000 organic searches a month. The only competitor in the space, because no one else wants to do it, because it's,
you can't run ads,
hilarious, you can't do ads, it's super embarrassing, you can't tell your friends, like, you know, it's just like goofy. But it was a lot of searches, so I was like, okay, I'll do that. And this is 2018, I was doing this, and you know, I could run Google ads, so I taught myself how to run Google ads, and kind of got that working, and built as much of a business as you can build in that way, which is like not that much. And then I got to the point where I was like, you know, I have a skill now. Maybe I'll take the skill and, you know, apply it somewhere else. And I was ready. I'd never had health insurance in my life. I'd never had a job in my life. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll go to the doctor. Maybe I'll get a job. So I went, just lucky, someone from Mute6 reached out to me. I'd never heard of Mute6 at the time. For, you know, people listening, like, Mute6 was probably one of the, you know, big, it's probably one of the bigger Facebook first paid social Shopify agencies in the country. You know, probably, I think they're at like 500 headcount now. They got bought by Dentsu about when I left, like big success story, big LA story. And they were really hard up for Google Ads buyers. And now that I run an agency, like it's really hard to find Google Ads buyers. It's really difficult. And so I went in there and I just kind of replaced the word butt plug from my resume with like product. I was like, learned to sell products online, and they were fine with it. And, you know, after I got the job, I talked to my bosses and they've all sold like far more embarrassing things, like any good marketer. So, it was all, you know, all good in time. And I got absolutely schooled there. It was awesome. Like I'm so grateful. I only spent 9 months there. And I learned so much, like, because I'd had that like hustle mentality, and I'm sure this will resonate with a lot of people, like it's really hard to turn it off. So like, I couldn't like go in and just like kind of do an okay job. Like I was so sure I was going to get fired, or like I wouldn't get my check if I didn't like scale every single account. And like in hindsight, like that's insane. Like, you know, like there are people who coast at office jobs for, you know, their entire careers, but like, I just didn't know how to do it. So my boss, Elmar, he like really showed me how to do it. Like he showed me how to run Google Ads, and he was running a lot of like really serious accounts. He was running, he was, you know, an old school affiliate marketer. He had done a lot of lead gen, you know, he was spending many millions of dollars a month on Google Ads, and, you know, just really knew what he was doing. And what I lacked in technical sophistication or experience. I didn't, you know, I hadn't spent 10 years running ads. I didn't know every feature of the platform. But what I did know
was creative.
Yeah, exactly. I figured out the creative. I was like, I'll just do something that's like interesting. And all my successes came on YouTube, and they're all the same thing. The same thing every single time. I just bribed an editor to make me an ad, because Google ads people, like, we didn't even get, our clients didn't have editing packages. So I would like go and find an editor that I liked. I would like give her a pizza and she would make me an ad. And we made UGC mashups. What now is like the most standard ad in the world. Like, not everyone was doing that. Like, I would download every single clip I could find from all of the customers. I would, you know, write out a script, and I would have it cut it up, and I'd turn that into an ad, and I would build a long landing page. This is just how you run a business. And I build a long landing page and send that traffic, and it would just work, because most people, they just won't bother. Like, it's annoying, you know, like, it's just like a pain to do.
It's hard work. And how does YouTube come into that though? Like, you're using YouTube to cut stuff up?
Oh, I wasn't cutting on, so I was running ads on YouTube. I would build these like 2.5 minute long ads, and I'd run it on YouTube. And YouTube at the time, it's harder now, but it was really scalable at the time. Like, if you got something working, it was all or nothing. It like either wouldn't convert at all, or you'd just go crazy. Like, it was like, you know, I took accounts. I remember taking one account from $0 in YouTube spend to like 160 grand in YouTube spend in 2 months. Just like,
I don't think people understand how addictive that kind of like thing is. Like, because I actually, this is just funny, but born in Montreal, was in a band from 2007 to 2012, touring full time. I slayed my tour dragon. But you know, what's really like addictive is in e-commerce for me. Like, once I found e-commerce, I got hooked, because you're right. It's like fail, massive success. Like, you know, like, if you get it right, if you tinkered it right or whatever, it was like, oh, this is like, it's almost like, you know, you're like at the slot machine and you hit it. Yeah. It's like ding, 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 ding. Yeah. And you're chasing that. Yeah.
Exactly. And people don't talk about this very much, because, like, you know, the front end of these platforms are designed to be addictive, right? Like, Facebook's designed to be addictive. You know, all of these platforms, they build them for retention, but the back end is addictive too. It's like, it's addictive to run ads. Like, you know, you're playing with numbers all day. If you have this like a slight math brain and you like to be on the computer, like, it will suck you in. And then when you get a win, it's just like, it's crazy. Nothing feels like that. And wins are harder to come by now, which I think is what we're going to talk about. But at the time, like, it was really just about like the right product, you know, the right messaging, and then just like getting out of the way of the algorithm. And I didn't know that, like, no one else does that. Like, so few people do that. And a lot of people sit in agencies for their whole career, and they think the answers are like in like, oh, I'll change that bidding strategy, or like, oh, I'll change my budget from like $150 to $200. But like, if you're a real dopamine addict, if you're like, that's not enough. It doesn't feel good enough. So I need a 10x win to feel good. And so I was chasing 10x wins. And once I got a couple, then I got bored. then the addiction wore off, and I wasn't getting enough thrills. So I left and I went to another agency. I was like, I want to see what it's like to spend like massive budgets, like multi-million monthly budgets. So I went to a media and entertainment agency because I thought they would have massive budgets. And they did, but the only KPI was spending the exact budget to the cent. Because there's no conversion tracking, the budget is pre-allocated, you're not actually driving revenue for anyone. The person you're reporting to is like a mid-level manager at like Warner Brothers or something. It wasn't Warner Brothers, but like a Warner Brothers-esque company, and their KPI is, did they manage the agency to the budget? So I'm not a detail-oriented person. I'm not like a like getting every button correct thing. And I literally, I did it for 2 weeks. Like, I just got up and I just went to my boss and I was like, man, like, you have hired the wrong person. Like, I can't do this job. Like, you'll fail because I can't spend the budget to the limit. If you know, I'm going to figure out a way to get double the budget because I need it.
Yeah.
And so then I left, I kind of tinkered around for a bit, and then the pandemic hit. And then when the pandemic hit, anyone who'd ever run an ad before was suddenly in like just like massively needed, and just so many people were hitting me up, and just like it felt like it was just like so chaotic, and just everyone needed media buyers just constantly. And that was when we started. We didn't even kind of realize what we were doing. Like, we just thought like it would be like, oh yeah, a group of freelancers, and we'll just take our clients and pull the clients together. And then immediately what happens is you get, you know, the agency logic kind of takes over. It's like, okay, well, now I have a bunch of clients. How do we share resources? Now we're all working on our clients all day, but we don't have enough revenue. So now we need to hire someone to, you know, take care of the clients so we can go and get enough revenue. And you just become an agency, like without, you know, you don't even ask for it. You're like, well, guess I'm an agency now.
Yeah.
And that was 2 years ago. And, you know, since then we've done what, total like 3.5 million top line. And I mean, you know, hired and fired a lot, you know, we've been through a lot. We started with some okay clients, but like the clients that we're a Shopify Plus partner agency now. We, you know, Unilever is a client. We have some big pet or Bully Makes a client, Free Fly Apparel. We have, you know, some really nice, like mid-size Roadrunner Sports, like, you know, mid-size e-commerce brands, like $100 million brands, $50 million brands. And I feel like I haven't stood up in 2 years. Like I've just been, you know, just doing it. And, you know, to go back to what we were saying before, like I had no plans to do this. Absolutely no desire to like, quote unquote, be an entrepreneur. But like, you know, was uncanny, right? That like you and I just have the same background. Like we grew up in a weird place. We fell into bands. We were like figured out how to live somehow. And like 80% of agency owners that I meet have that same background. Like they come from something weird. They at some point in time had to figure out how to make money. A lot of the time you have like a chip on your shoulder, like you were like bullied, or like you, like, you know, you have some reason why you need to prove to yourself that you can do this. And you know you've learned to be persistent.
I think it's because I think it's like just to like add to that, like if you're a loner, you can be very successful at this.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're social, but just like being able to spend, you know, a lot of hours practicing your craft, like, you know, musicians. I mean, I'd practice like 1 year we played like 96 shows while in school, while doing all these things, you know. I was getting a computer science degree, like proctoring tests on the road, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like just doing crazy stuff like that. And I was chasing freedom. Mm-hmm. Well, this is freedom in a different sense, you know. For one, it's financial freedom, but it's also geographical freedom. Like you're in Berlin right now versus like, you know, traditional job, you got to be somewhere, show up in a chair. So it has these like similar qualities that just like, you know, for me, it's I'm from the bottom, like I'm from the dirt. So like, there's no boys or girls club, you know. It was like, I didn't have to be a member of something to be successful at this. If I was good, then, you know, then I could be successful. And then also like, let's not get it twisted. Like, okay, when MySpace and Facebook first came out, it was bands that were making those MySpace band flyers. Am I wrong?
100%. Yeah.
Right?
Completely.
Yes. Those are like some of the original, like, you know, things getting shared. You know, if you create a great flyer, like, you know, that was important to get it shared and get people at your shows. And like, you know, for me, I just kind of rethought about how I was like, you know, we were making albums and shirts and merch and like all those kinds of things. But I didn't really apply it to like, you know, what I do now originally. But I'm like, it really does. Like we were, you know, I was working with, the people I was working with in my band days are now, a lot of them are very successful doing all kinds of things, from, you know, from music to muralists to like, and like there's this muralist in LA that's like, really popular and famous. He goes back and forth, Kansas City to LA. He used to design my band tees, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who would have known at that point when he was at Starbucks, like going to art school, that he was going to be like that successful. But like, you know, we were like developing talent, kind of curating like the business aspects of planning a tour, you know, the operations of like loading in and loading out and like, you know, selling. I was getting me experience in selling and you know, like buy my stuff. Like I'm not going to make it to the next city if you don't buy my stuff, you know? And just like, it pushed me as an introvert into a lot of like understanding brand. Like if you're trying to get signed by a label, like you definitely had to have a look and a feel, you know, between your band, or at least like that's what, you know, we were getting told. We're looking for a certain type of like, if you're approaching certain labels, like we're looking for, a, you know, this kind of look and sound. And so you start being like, okay, let's like craft more of our songs to be kind of universal, or like that can go together and cohesive. Just like some interesting plays, I think, between like the music world and the band world and e-commerce and what it did for a lot of people.
100%. Absolutely. All of that makes complete perfect sense to me. And you know, what's funny is like, there's actually two things. The first thing is like, I think that one thing that you learn from being in a band is that stuff just kind of happens to you. And it's very different stuff and it escalates really quickly and you have to kind of roll with the punches. You have to be like, oh, okay, yeah, now I guess I know how to, you know, show up in all these different cities and do that. And it's just like, it just happens to you. And when we were, you know, first scaling, when we really started scaling, it was my musician friends who could tolerate that. Because it's just like random stuff starts happening to you. I actually had a couple of my musician friends working in the business because they like didn't have anything to do during COVID. And they were just like, oh yeah, okay, I guess I'll do this now. Like you become very flexible. And then I think the introvert thing really resonates because like to get good at e-commerce, you have to have that practice mentality. Like I'm just going to sit in a room, keep doing it over and over and over again. But then to get good at running an agency, you have to become a very like practiced, you don't have to be an extrovert, but you have to be very good at being social and reading people because you're going to make a lot of deals. And I think all the time, I talk about this all the time, like the thing that stays with me the most from tour is like every night you get out of the van in a different city and you meet immediately a stage manager, a sound engineer, you know, a venue manager, like all these people, and your entire night and your whole experience is, you know, contingent on them liking you. If they don't like you, like you're gonna have a terrible time. Like they're not gonna help you out. Like they're not gonna do favors for you. Like they're not gonna help you load the van. Like it's gonna be super annoying. So you have to like really quickly like figure out what kind of person they are, get on their level and make that conversation enjoyable for them. And like that's sales. Like once you can do that, like you can close any deal. And if you can get on a call and you can like match that person's energy right away, like you can build an agency because you'll just, you know, take 20 calls and you'll have 20 clients by the end because people want to work with you because they like you. And I think introverts
love that. I love that comparison. Yeah. Like I didn't think of that as far as like, you know, the throwing you for a loop with all the changes, you know. But like you're so right, you know. And it's like, okay, the van breaks down, or you're sleeping in a, like you're sleeping in some people's mansion for the night, or like you're sleeping in the venue, or like, you know, there's three people at the show and you're playing for the other bands and you're still like trying to like, you know, well, those other bands might be the ones that take you on their next tour, or like, you know, the venue might have you back and there's something had happened, there's only three people there that night, who knows. But it was just like, you know, whether it was rejection or like always that always on mentality when it's time to go. And you're like, you know, we were like throwing guitars and light show and like, you know, pretty produced and like played with tracks. And like, we'd still go hard if there's four people there, you know, like, cause we were just like, well, these four people paid. So, you know, I think having that mindset too, like with customers and just being like, well, they've paid, like, I'm going to deliver great results. Like, you know, they're here to show up. They've chosen me to work with, like, I'm going to deliver that. And also that practice mentality, like I truly am an Amazon expert. And I say that confidently, like I've spent 11 plus years doing it. 20, 30,000 hours minimum, probably, like, you know, and that's like, you know, that's where you get true expertise. Same thing with musicians, like, you know, they spend so many hours. And then also the crafting, like, you know, a song is a story, a good song is a story. And I think like whenever we're working with brands, we're trying to bring out that story. Like, what do you think you meant with this? Like, you know, and pulling in all the different parts to like work together seamlessly. So I know we've made it like a comparison thing, but it's just, I honestly, like if people listen to my 100 plus episodes, there's probably been 10 plus that, like, you know, their background started in music, and not all my interviews are agencies, you know? So, it's something very common that I didn't really, understand the why, but I think it was just to a certain level, you just get tired of being poor and you're like,
yes,
I want to make some money, you know, I want to have a girlfriend, or like, you know, and I want to take her on a date, or I want to be able to like, you know, fix the tire when it happens. So, Let's talk about Loop Club. Okay. Yeah. So guys are crushing it, by the way. Love the website. I definitely took a deep dive before I got on the show. we became an Amazon agency partner, 2019, like, which was in their first round of, agency partners. We're pretty proud of that. Tell me about what a Shopify A Plus partner means and, like, you know, what you guys specialize on there.
Yeah, for sure. This was a pretty big win for us. So for those who maybe don't have, are not in the ecosystem, the, you know, the Shopify and the Shopify Plus, and Shopify Plus is the, you know, the most expensive Shopify plan. And it really doesn't make economic sense until you're doing, like, you know, $100,000 a month in revenue, but it does come with a bunch of advantages. Like, it's fast, you know, you can customize the checkout. You know, you get better rates on your, get better rates on credit card processing. You can do, like, international stores. It's like their premium, it's their enterprise product. Okay. And they, you can, like, most agencies, most Shopify agencies are Shopify Plus partners, but not that many are Shopify. Most agencies are Shopify partners, but not very many are Shopify Plus partners. Turns out, I didn't know this, but there's only 22 Shopify Plus partner marketing agencies in the country. It's a lot of dev agencies, but not that many marketing agencies. So this kind of, like, I mean, the real reason why it came up comes back to what we were talking about before is, like, I have a lot of friends in the ecosystem. Like, I've been working on Shopify since I started at Mute 6 and I like it. Like, and I got to know, one of the ways that I realized I could add value to my clients was, okay, what can I do outside the ad account? And a lot of what you do outside the ad account is like, oh, have you thought about this plugin, or have you thought about this app? Like, this way of doing, you know, this pop-up is really going to help your store. Or, like, have you thought about doing post-purchase upsells in this way? Or, like, are you financing in this way? And you end up, like, networking with a lot of SaaS companies, essentially, who are all, you know, apps that plug into the Shopify universe. And we just do have a, you know, I have a very opinionated, I have a lot of opinions about what the best Shopify Plus apps, best Shopify apps are. Right, and I
rightfully
tell everyone.
So. Rightfully and, so.
And, you know, I'm just, we're just sure of how to build this tech stack and can do it quickly and can give performance advice from that very, like, Shopify first viewpoint. So I think that's one thing that kind of helped us there. And then the second thing was, like, building our business during the pandemic and during the iOS 14 change meant that the business that we built looks really different to a lot of agencies that were built prior to that. Because you build a business pre-iOS 14, like, it was a lot easier to run ads. Like, it literally, it just was. It was way easier to do a lot of this stuff. So you, your expertise didn't necessarily need to be as sharp and as multifaceted as it is now. And because, you know, as we talked about before, like, it's very hard for me to just sit there and do a job. So I would just, like, obsess about these accounts and be like, okay, like, how am I going to do it? That obsession, that's baseline now. Like, you will not scale an account unless you can get that crazy about it. And so we were just so lucky that we had all these, you know, we were already thinking about the end-to-end e-commerce experience. We're so lucky because I can't even hire a media buyer who trained before iOS 14 now. Like, it's a red flag in an interview because you have too many blind spots. So that's what they saw in us. And, you know, it's been really great. Like, the Shopify Plus brand profile is a really ideal client for us. You know, you're typically at some scale, you have product market fit, you have a marketing team, you, a lot of the time you're spending, you know, we have clients who spend anywhere between $50,000 a month and $1 million a month on ads. Like, you're in a, you're a well-established business and you still have blind spots, right? Like, every business has blind spots. And if you know the whole ecosystem well, it's very easy for us to be like, oh, you haven't tried this. You haven't tried this. Yep. You know, we've got a big catalog of things we can do. So it's pretty easy for us to move the needle for this business. I don't want to say easy, but, like, it's not, a lot of the time for a plus brand or for a brand that's at some scale, it's not that the solution is technically challenging. It's just something they haven't thought of, or something that they didn't prioritize, or something that, like, was hard to get everyone on the same page about. And we can just do that quickly. So it's been really cool. It's a really nice market segment to service.
I love it. And I'm resonating with everything you're saying in the same way too. Like, I definitely have been, Marketology turns 8 in August. So we've been at it a minute. But the Amazon industry as a whole, and brands and, you know, manufacturers, companies coming to Amazon weren't really treating it like a true channel that needed optimized. Mm-hmm. They're just putting product up and kind of letting it happen. But as someone, you know, I think the word we're looking for is professional curiosity. And it's something that can't be taught. And if you yourself, just the way you describe your curiosity for, well, how can I be better? How can I win? How can I innovate? How can I, I'm a small bootstrapped entrepreneur. For me, it was speed and creativity around innovation. I'm just faster. I'm faster than the big boats, so to speak, and can move super quickly. And I spend thousands and thousands of dollars each year on R&D, I would say, testing what you would call apps on the Shopify side.
Yep.
Software that's coming out on the Amazon side. How does it integrate here? How does this, this connects with Google and TikTok and Facebook ads, and it tracks attribution directly to my Amazon pages. I need to know everything about it. There's a program just for, crowdfunded brands that they can get access to Amazon's Launchpad program. I need to know everything about it. So I interviewed a guy that had his doctorate in crowdfunding here, locally. That's my true, my obsession is that. It's truly that. I there's not one thing I want someone to bring up in a room and me not know or have heard about it. And it's not that I can't be humble and be I don't know. It's just that if it's an opportunity for a brand and I don't know of it, that's, they're paying me to know. They're paying me to be their strategist, as a company. Right. And so that's something that I definitely resonate with. And I think that if you're going to win, Amazon agencies are popping up everywhere. We are also one of two that are service based on the Amazon advertising side.
Wow.
So that's kind of interesting. You're talking about the devs, right? So in the first group of 60, 58 were dev and two were service based.
Wow.
We're one of the service space. We're pretty pumped about that. Just some similarities, between the two. But it's what took me so long was because in the Amazon space, the brands weren't, it was so easy at the beginning that they didn't almost think about how to do these things to be better because they were just winning in other ways. And I only wish that I knew more about creative and the impact of really good creative and really emotionally connecting messaging in that creative, from images or ads or whatever the case is. Because once I started working with brands that could invest there and do and then I also developed my own internal team that can deliver on what we're trying to do, it was just magic for us. And it's it's really the step above whoever else is out there. I'll be honest, they just, they haven't done it yet. I'm not saying they won't, but they haven't done it yet. And it's because it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. It's a hard thing to do. And so it really is the differences in all these things. It's it's very, very, very rare that we come across a brand that's at a certain level, that's trying to do certain things that we're not we can provide this level of improvement to whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just even if it looks beautiful, there's probably something on the ops side. There's always things that you can do that they haven't thought of. And unless they have a team that's been obsessing for years and years and years, which they have usually at most companies, those people have a lot of responsibilities. And Amazon is just a small piece, or Shopify or whatever is a small piece. There's no way they can learn about all of these things. So, I have a couple more questions. I want to get one more shout out to our sponsor. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io. We can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Let's talk about some of the, I'm spending a ton of time in TikTok. Okay. Just because as Amazon gets harder, there's a whole bunch of aggregators that have popped up, buying brands, selling brands. iOS 14 pushed a lot of advertising spend to Amazon for anyone that was doing both. And they're like, oh, we can't figure out Facebook. Let's dump our money into Amazon PPC. It's made my life a lot harder. It's filtered out the ones that were just kind of okay. And the best agencies will be the ones standing for sure. But in that time, it's let's say a competitor comes in because it's direct response marketing on Amazon, where it's you type in a search term and then it brings you to the product or not. It's not like Facebook or TikTok where it's customer segments, right? And so because of that, it's a completely different strategy. And if you're going against a big heavy hitter, a massive brand, we'll just say that, a massive brand, a Manscaped or something, and you're a small one trying to come out with a product, they could blanket you out on those product, on those search terms, right? If they had the budget, they could just cover them all. And so then you're how do I get visibility on my products if I'm native to Amazon? And a lot of that, what comes in is great, having a great D2C side as well, and strategy. If your website's doing well, they grow together. And so like whether you're using Facebook ads or TikTok ads, you can use these to gain momentum on your Amazon products. And this, like, these are strategies that they use. And so for me, Facebook and TikTok are top of mind always, spending a lot of time on TikTok now. Talk to me about what's like, you know, what's new, what new strategies. Like, I know you guys have, you guys offer TikTok services and Facebook services and all those things as well. Talk to me just maybe a few examples about what you're doing with brands, like how you're working with some brands in some innovative ways to, like, you know, to continue to win as things change.
Yeah. So TikTok is obviously like the next frontier. And I think everyone, there's been a lot of like, oh, you know, some kind of flashy, you know, everyone's like making a lot of noise about it, but it's still hard. You know, it's still a difficult channel. I mean, everything's difficult right now, but what's cool about TikTok is you can really get it to work. We've been running it this year and it is fun. Like, it's fun because the aesthetics are quite different, because the pace is quite different. What you need to do with your customer, like the customer journey is quite different, and the expectations that, you know, they're all different. But if you can dial everything in, like you can move the needle really quickly in ways that are, you know, just difficult to do on Facebook these days. So, you know,
the customers have moved, and like, you know, there's a lot more older customers on Facebook, I think, than, you know, years past. And then like the younger generation has moved on. And like Instagram kind of seems like it's almost like the band crowd, like not really, but like the artists, creatives, a little bit older, mature. There's not bullying. There's not these things like, you know, it's really kind of like, at first it was just social media. And now I feel like there's some very clear differences, like as you move through them. So for me, it's like, paid on TikTok, it's like, you know, influencer marketing on TikTok, or it's like organically, like posting as the brand, and, you know, some variations of those three. Is there anything outside of that that you're like, you know, when you work with a brand, are you working with influencers? Are you creating content for them? Like, how does that look?
Yeah, exactly. So I think what you have to do, TikTok has really solidified and made completely standard this concept of like creator marketing. So it used to be that when, you know, when we started doing this at Meet6, or when they started doing it a couple of years before I got there, you know, they were some of the first people to make Facebook ads where it was just like, oh my God, just a regular person was saying this to the camera. And it wasn't a regular person. It's never been a regular person. It was someone in the office.
It costs a ton too. It costs a lot. Yeah.
It costs a lot. Yeah. It's hard to do.
Traditional ads.
It costs a lot. It was, you know, sometimes it was like us. It was like people in the office who would like make quote unquote user generated content. Like, but sometimes it would be, you know, a real shoot. You know, sometimes it would be your customers. And we still use real customer stuff all the time. But this, you know, a real person showing off the product aesthetic, that is TikTok. That is what the channel is. You cannot be branded there. You cannot be, you know, beautiful. Like, it has to look 100% real. That's the first challenge. It has to, you know, people have to think that someone just made it. The second challenge is that the platform does not care at all how many followers you have, or how many, you know, it just doesn't care. It's not relevant. What is relevant is every single piece of content is judged on how well does this content keep you on the platform. Watch time is the single metric that matters to TikTok as an entity, and it will judge a piece of every single piece of content is judged equally based on watch time. So you could have zero followers and put up something and it could go massively, massively viral the next day because a certain percentage of people watch it all the way through. So you're in this is a difficult situation for a large advertiser, right? If you're Dunkin' Donuts, like, you are used to the idea that everyone's going to watch what you do because they already understand who you are. You have a certain brand, you have a certain, you know, affinity. People just watch the ad because they know who you are. But now, like, all your brand is gone, the branded elements are taken away, and watch time is the only important thing. So if you have a million followers, no one cares at all. It doesn't matter. So you have to make like the most engaging content, like the funniest, the loudest, the sharpest, the most immediate, like the most engaging content possible. Otherwise, there's no chance. The second,
like long gone are the days. I'm sorry, like long gone are the days of like the Cialis ad, like, you know, on TV. Yeah. That's like, oh my God, in the last 30 seconds are like all the side effects.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. Exactly. Yeah. Like that stuff, it's just, yeah, it's not going to happen anymore. And, what's crazy about the second piece is that TikTok is also obsessed with newness. They aggressively prioritize newness. So they want you to be uploading more and more and more content all the time. So you now have to be making high quality, funny, engaging, great content. And if you're lucky, you can run it as an ad for a week before the creative fatigue is and it doesn't perform anymore. So the volume of creative that an average brand needs to make has gone from like, okay, I need one new piece of content a month, one great new ad a month, to like, I need 10 new ads a week.
And I need them to be kind of shitty. Like,
yeah,
kind of, like, you know, bad,
but I need
it's hard for me. Like, I talk to people like you all day, like on the podcast or like, you know, in sales calls or like talking to CEOs, VPs, like, and something that's been difficult for me as I try to like plan out our channel or plan out some stuff for brands or like, I still like to get involved in some of the creative ideas like on the team. And like, if we're working with a brand we're stuck with, like, I want to get in there. And, you know, it's really hard for me to, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but like, think simple. Think like simple, like just Drew, like, you know, this is your normal way. Like you think like, you know, you're trying to keep up with some like $100 million thinker sometimes on the phone, or like, you're just like, you know, you're trying to like keep up. And then it's like for TikTok, I need you to like go exactly the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And slow your brain down and like be funny or be entertaining or like, you know, cause it's still just as creative to get that. Don't get me wrong. It's just like Gen Z and like, you know, one, you talked about like creative enough to bring them through the length of the video, like to the end, but then also like, think like lowest common denominator.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Simple. And it's so
fifth grade level or something like that, you know,
hard. It takes years of experience. The best creative strategists can just come up with these ideas that are just so simple. And it has to be like, because the first frame of the ad is the most important, right? Like someone is going to make a decision with their subconscious is going to make a decision about whether they want to watch it before they even think to themselves if this is
emotional. It's because it's emotional connection first, the emotional brain, then the logic brain.
Yeah.
Like, and so you're trying to connect to that emotional brain, like whether they're afraid or laughing or turned on or like whatever it is, it's like you're trying to like get them with that.
Yeah. And it has to make sense. Like it has to make sense within like a fraction of a second. And so, you know, it takes a lot of work and we've had to build a number of systems around how to do this. Like we've built, you know, a platform where we can very, very quickly like recruit new creators and train them up and show them like the back and forth. We've had to build like so many different creative brief, you know, templates, like so many different systems, so many example decks, because like, yes, if you have all day, you can make one really, really good ad, but you don't have all day. You need 10 times as many as you did 4 months ago, and you need them at scale, and you need them across your whole portfolio. So making engaging content at scale is the challenge right now. It's the hardest thing to do.
I mean, talking about Andrew Tate, not to give him more attention than he already has, but all he did was like, you know, recruit an army of creators to like edit up his content.
Yeah.
And like, you know, spread it all over TikTok. You know, he had years of content out there on YouTube or podcasts or whatever. And he's like, you know, he's recruited a whole bunch of these like young creators to edit up his content so that he can make that much video at mass, which as ridiculous as it is, like it's still like kind of brilliant in a way. And like, that's what you're trying to recreate at the same time. Gary Vee, kind of the same thing. He's like, how do you take like a pillar piece of content and make 20 pieces?
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you're repurposing that for whatever channel you're on, but the principle still applies of just like, how do you create content in mass for these platforms? Cause it's not about perfection anymore. It's about, you know, quantity.
Absolutely. It is a volume game. And I mean, you said it, right? Like when you're building your agency, like being fast was the most important thing. Like being fast is the most important thing. It's always been the most important thing. And it you know, but now it's like, how do you do it fast and at massive, massive volume? So, you know, we use tech solutions to do it that will like help us slice up our content so we can then like, you know, recut it automatically into like 10 new ads. We use, you know, platform solutions, we use database solutions, we use, you know, templates and briefs, but you know, it's really hard. And like most brands, like if you start an e-commerce brand, you don't start it thinking to yourself, like, okay, like how do I get, you know, 100 videos in a 3 week, you know, time period? Like that's just like not, it's not on your mind. So
yeah,
it's a really new challenge.
All right. So as we close up, got a little couple minutes here. Like what's next for Loop Club? You know, I know you guys just like, I think you just published a new website, a new refresh, at least on the site. Like it looks sharp. That's always a project. I know that, you know, but what's your focus as an agency? One is like, you know, what is something you guys are working on, you know, that's exciting for you. And then two, like, you know, what's something that you would leave either with some young agency owners that are tuning in or just some young e-commerce brands that are like, you know, trying to win, in 2022 and beyond. So one, what's exciting and new that you guys, something you guys are working on. And then two, something to leave with our listeners.
Totally. So, I mean, the thing I'm most excited about, we actually spun out all of this like user generated content creation stuff into a different business because it's so, so important. We built a platform around it. So, you know, we built a no code platform where you can go in and like assign briefs to content creators and go back and forth on content and pay them. Awesome. And it's working, and it's working across multiple brands. So now the next step is to open that up to other agencies and brand owners and build like a two-sided content marketplace.
Pick me.
Yeah. I mean, everyone, like I posted, I was like, hey, like who wants to be part of, you know, user generated content marketplace? And I just got like hundreds of people because it's really hard. Like there's not that much, there are a lot of marketplaces out there, but the quality is very, very, very low, super low. So we figured out how to sort, we kind of cracked the code on sourcing creators. So we can then filter them. You know, we can source infinite creators and filter the top 1%. So I can't wait to launch that. Like launching a platform is something that I've always wanted to do. I think it's a cool business model. I think it's like, you know, nice and scalable and you know, interesting. It has a little bit of tech involved in it. So I'm stoked on that. And yeah, new agency owners.
Or just e-commerce brand owners that are like trying to win, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Stop like... If you're an e-commerce brand owner, it's more important than ever right now to remember the difference between who you are and who you want to be. I think a lot of brand owners get stuck on who they want to be. We're an aspirational brand. We're a lifestyle brand. No, we would never do that. We would never say that. This is not how we represent ourselves. Our ads need to look like this. Our pages need to look like this. Our blank needs to look like this. And you can get pretty far with that. And you have been able to get pretty far, but most businesses that really scale don't think like that. Most businesses that scale, especially, you know, from coming from the B2B world, it's like, I go find a problem and then I present the solution to you. And the solution looks however it looks, but does it solve the problem? And so if you want to win on TikTok, it needs to look like a TikTok. If you want to win on Facebook, it's got to look like, you know, there's a reason why those like crummy little Facebook ads with like big black bars on top. And like, you know, there's a reason why it works. It's because that's what people are looking at on Facebook. Like there's not much time left to be precious and be like, oh, well, we don't want to be like this. Like you need to operate in the present and be honest about the numbers that you're seeing on the page. If an ad is doing better than another ad and you think it's worse, you don't like it as much, you're wrong because it's doing worse.
Data doesn't lie.
Yeah. So just it's one of the hardest things in the world because you get into entrepreneurship because you have an opinion about who you are and where you can go. And opinions not that helpful in this business. So it's like, you know, just look at the numbers with open eyes and go where they tell you to go. And you may end up somewhere where you don't expect or where you didn't plan on being, but you will almost certainly be somewhere that is more successful and enjoyable than what you, where you are now.
So good, Tim. Honestly, like it's a great way to close out the episode. You know, you just go into something with an open mind without expectation and let the data speak. That's why I love Amazon. I love e-commerce in general because it's not guessing, right? Yeah. I get to make educated decisions. Like I get to make data-driven decisions. This creative, this keyword, this ad type. Like, let's run, let's test. Let's just like let the data help us get better and better. Businesses, what I love about business is that business will always evolve and continue to get better and better. Like when you're in business, it's always getting better and better and better. And when you get stuck, or you get stuck in your ways, or you get stuck in your mindset, this is the way it's always been, is when you get left behind. And for me, I'm the other kind of way. So I love it because of that, because it's constantly changing, and it's like a new city every night, right? Yeah. You're kind of getting that, like this new brand, this new item. It's not selling butt plugs anymore. Now I'm selling like adult diapers or something, you know?
Yeah.
But it's always changing, and it's like, okay, this is a little bit different. I got to do it a little bit different, you know, figure it out. But that's where the reward is. And that's the difference in like being the very best and being average at what you do. So thanks so much for being on the show, Tim.
Pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And once again, shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? Let Fullscale help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit Fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions, then let the platform match you up with a fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Fullscale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. Tim, you're talking about building a platform. My mentor, Matt DeCourcy, another host on the show, has built, obviously, of course, fullscale.io. And they're actually, their platform for sourcing talent is pretty impressive. It's pretty incredible. And as you're building a platform now to find creators, it might be something that just, I want to look around the site, the way that he's done it with the avatars and the team is like really cool and really efficient. But anyway, shout out to Fullscale.io for making this episode possible. Tim, I don't think it'll be the last time we connect. I obviously got to check out the platform as well. So thanks for being on the show, and we'll see you next time, hustlers.
Thanks.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.